It's time for Windows Weekly. Paul Thurrott is going to be here. He's on his way back from Ignite. Mary Jo Foley's still there. And they'll be joined by Corey Sanders, Director of Program Management for Microsoft Azure. We've got a lot of enterprise news, but Windows news too. We're going to talk about Windows and Microsoft in just a bit. It's next, Windows Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott and Mary Jo Foley, episode 412, recorded Wednesday, May 6th, 2015. Not unattractive enough. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Harry's. For guys who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, visit harrys.com. Get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code Windows when you check out. And by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/Windows. And by Lynda.com, the online learning platform with over 3,000 on-demand video courses to help you strengthen your business, technology, and creative skills. For a free 10-day trial, visit lynda.com/windows. That's lynda.com/windows. It's time for Windows Weekly, the show where we cover Windows every week. See, that's the name. Microsoft, actually really more than Windows, because Microsoft is so much more than Windows these days. Mary Jo Foley is here. Paul Thurrott is younger. Mary Jo, you want to explain what happened? Did Paul get like a new get a plastic surgeon? What happened here?
He did, yeah. So we traveled from Petaluma last week to Chicago this week, and somehow Paul de-aged. He's now Corey Sanders. Yeah.
Corey,
so we're here in the convention center at Microsoft Ignite, which is the big show that they do for IT pros and devs. And since Paul is on his way home from Chicago, he's going to magically appear at some point in the show.
Oh, cool.
We've got Corey Sanders, who's the Director of Program Management with Azure, with us. He's been at Microsoft for 10 years. He's the guy who's kind of in charge of IaaS, Infrastructure as a Service, at Azure. And I hear he really loves Linux. I don't know if that's just a rumor.
Wow. Did you hide it for the first 8 years of your Microsoft tenure?
I did. Yeah, they didn't let me out in public. And then finally I can talk to people now. So it's a new job for me. Yeah.
And you work side by side with Mark Rusinovich, I gather.
I do. Yeah. Actually, more often than I'd like, I think. But yeah.
Well, we love Mark. I've met him only in this context, you know, on the shows, but loved SysInternals, was thrilled when Microsoft incorporated into their system. His novels are great. We've talked to him about his novels.
They are, yeah.
He's a great writer, and I think that I have to guess your tenure to Azure has really taken off. So
yeah,
it's great to have you, Corey. Thank you for joining.
Thank
us.
Thank you. Yeah. So you've not met Mark in person.
No.
Then.
No.
So you don't know that he's freakishly tall. That's one of his. That's one of his trademarks.
I assumed that for some reason. Yeah. I don't know why. Yeah. He just seemed like a lanky, kind of beanpole type with great hair. I don't know.
That's right.
Just in my mind, that's the picture I've painted of him.
You've got the perfect picture. That's right.
So, Mary, I'm going to let you lead the way. And as you mentioned, because Paul's on the way home to Boston, he's just going to magically appear in a few minutes.
He is.
And we'll put him into the mix.
Exactly.
So how is it? I guess I should ask, how has we talked about Build last week? And by the way, if you missed Windows Weekly last week, what a great fun show that was. It was jam-packed.
We're still recovering from that show.
Yeah. And have you had your meetup in I didn't ask you how your meetup went at Build.
Yep. We had a great meetup at Build with lots of Windows Weekly fans. And Gabe All showed up. And Steve Guggenheimer showed
You're
up. And John Shuchuk. No, they all came in person.
That's
I know.
Nice.
It was awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, and then we had a meetup here in Chicago at Pork Chop, which is a restaurant. And we had, I'd say, like 70 people show up from Ignite on a really busy party night. They all came to our meetup here. So, yeah.
You are beloved.
We are.
Yes.
We are.
The beloved Paul Surratt and Mary Jo Foley. Yeah, it's great.
This is how beloved we are. Today I was at Ignite and a guy from Belgium tweeted to me and he said, I brought you some beers from Belgium. And so he came and found me.
Wow.
And he brought me one for me and something for Corey.
Oh, nice.
We're just keeping the drinking show going, I guess.
Is it? Right. Tell us about it. Is it good?
Yeah, I have the Westmalle Trappist Double. Paul would have loved this beer.
Yeah.
Too bad. He's on a plane. But yeah, it's really fantastic double and one of the very few Trappist ales, so it's delicious.
I love Trappist ales. But you've convinced me triples are the way to go.
Corey has.
You have a triple?
Yeah. Let's get it right there. See that?
A Trappist triple.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's very good. A nice solid 8% alcohol. So by the end of the show... You ask me anything you want. It's coming out.
This is our strategy. We give them alcohol.
Yeah, exactly. It's very good. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Trappist triple sounds like some sort of golf thing. Like, got a bogey, an eagle. Oh, you got a Trappist triple.
Oh,
wow.
Better luck next time.
That's worse than a double bogey, I think.
Indeed.
Right. So we have to give the guy who brought it a shout out, Peter Bowens from Belgium. Thank you. That was awesome of you.
And Peter, we apologize for our Flemish pronunciation now and forevermore.
Yes. Yeah, so we're here with 23,000 people.
That's big. Is that bigger than Build?
Yes, a lot bigger than Build. Like, I think Build was close to 5,000. So this is four times the number of people. And it's been a madhouse because everybody's all over Chicago. There's buses coming to this huge convention center. They feed 23,000 people all at the same time here.
Wow.
And that's just watching that is insane. So, they've got all these different sessions going on all kinds of enterprise stuff and also Windows 10, too. So all of these things have been really popular. The sessions are selling out. People can't get in. I think it's a success, except for maybe some of the logistics. But otherwise, it's a big, it's bringing together all of the Microsoft conferences that used to be separate. So it brings together the SharePoint conference and the Exchange conference and MMS, and then, of course, TechEd. So all of that is converged now into this one big show called Ignite.
So Build is for developers and Ignite is for everybody else.
Exactly.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, so we've heard a lot of enterprise news. I was just going to go through it super quick and then dig in with Corey on some of the Azure stuff because I think the Azure stuff was really key here.
Yeah.
So we heard this week at the show about the next version of Windows Server 2016 and System Center 2016, and Microsoft made new tech previews of both of those available as of this week, which is great. Also a new preview of Office 2016 for the desktop. So if you're running Windows Desktop, Windows 7, 8, or 10, you can try out this new public preview of the desktop version of Office that's out. And Sway, which we've talked a lot about on Windows Weekly, is now going to be added to Office 365. I'm a big Sway fan, I have to say. I've done a few Sways.
You've been the best Sway ambassador, those great Sways from Vietnam. They were amazing.
Yeah. Yep. So that's coming to Office 365, we found out.
Oh, good.
We learned a lot of people coming into the show were afraid that SharePoint and Exchange on-premises were dead. But at the show here, we heard about SharePoint Server 2016 and Exchange Server 2016, neither of which is dead. They're both coming this year. SharePoint next year, Exchange later this year. SQL Server, we heard there's a new version coming next year called SQL Server 2016 that adds in some of the R analytics capabilities that Microsoft has now because they bought Revolution Analytics. And so all of that was in this giant day one keynote and more. Then we're going to talk about the Azure news because Corey is really good at explaining Azure in ways that are understandable to mortals. Setting the bar for you there.
I know. I feel like I need to drink less now.
too late.
I know. I've gone down a path now. Yeah, there's no going back.
So I thought for the Windows Weekly audience, it would be good to talk about, like, first off, Microsoft's goal with Azure. It's to be the back end for all mobile services, like wherever you are, iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Windows tablets. I mean, could you talk a little more about that? Like, what's the thinking there, right?
Wait, hold on. This might be a good time to take a break.
Oh, okay.
And then that's exactly what we'll talk about when we come back.
Okay.
But okay, I had to say, I just noticed that, Corey, maybe you jumped out of bed. You haven't shaved yet today.
Yeah, no, this is the look. I call it the open source beard.
Open source beard.
This is Half of my team works on Linux, and they're required to grow beards.
And so you're halfway there.
That's right, exactly.
I got it. Yeah, exactly. See, I wanted to do an ad for our Harry's shave kit and send you one, and I thought you'd love these. These are so good. But if you don't need it, I can keep it.
I may need it for half because I still work the Windows side as well.
So when you're hanging out with the Windows team.
Before you go in,
shave half your face. Go to Harry's.com is a really great place to get an amazing deal. Harry's kind of did the thing right. They said, if we were going to make a great razor and a great blade, what would we do? And they did some investigation before they started. And in the data-driven startup world, you know, this is the kind of thing you do. You don't just launch a company. You crunch the numbers, and they found out that there are two factories in the whole world that make the best razor blades. They're both in Germany, of course. I don't know why I said of course, but the best knives are all from Solingen. Yeah, I mean they bought the factory in Germany, and they make the blades, and that means that they can produce them and sell them direct to you at a much lower cost. But they can also make sure that the blades are designed. You know, to their specifications for performance, for sharpness. The steel they use is the very finest. It's really kind of cool. They own the entire process. And it means they can sell their blades to you at half the cost of the drugstore blades. But it all starts with this right here, the Harry's kit. Let me show you my Harry's kit. And this is a great deal. This is the Truman. $15. I'm going to tell you how you can get it for less. It includes your great Harry's razor handle, three of the Harry's blades. The Truman is a way to try, I think, just to get a sense of what Harry's can be for you. So you get three blades, you get the handle. And the Truman, you get a choice of four colors for the handle. They also have the Winston for a little bit more. I think it's $25, and that's a metal handle engraved. I use the Winston. Steve Gibson says he got the Winston first, and he went out and got a Truman because he just likes the way the handle feels. It also includes, this is more handy than one might think. This is a little, you put this on your razor when you travel. I know a lot of you spend a lot of time on the road. And then you put this in your DOP kit. You're not going to get cut. I mean, am I doing it right? And B... it'll let the razor, yeah, there it is. So it'll let the razor dry out, but it protects the blade and protects your fingers against the blade. But that's not all. The kit also includes the Harry's foaming shave gel. Now, they also have, and you choose when you choose the kit, the cream. Now, I'm a cream fan. The shave gel is, a lot of people prefer that. You get to choose. Pick the one you want. But go to Harry's, H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com, and check the whole thing out. Because I think you're going to just really love the Harry's blade. By the way, after you buy the kit, I'm really excited, the Harry's razor stand. It's got my name engraved on it because, well, my wife keeps borrowing my blade. So now she knows. We got his and her Harry's. So I have the, I know, it's pretty funny, isn't it? We keep telling him, you should do a Harriet's. But I got, it has my name on it. And it's really nice, a cast aluminum cube. That this would be great for Father's Day. Put Dad's name on it. Get him the kit. I just love Harry's. No, you will too. Now, here's the deal. When you go to harrys.com, use our offer code WINDOWS, and you'll get $5 off your first order. That means now you got the Truman set for $10. Look, if you don't do this, you're crazy. At least try it. You can subscribe, of course. We do. And then you get Harry's blades regularly delivered right to your door at a great price. H-A-R-R-Y-S, harrys.com. Get $5 off your first order when you use the offer code WINDOWS. Back we go.
Nice.
You want it? I'll send you one.
I think I do need it, actually.
Mary Jo, get Corey's address, and we'll send him a Harry's kit.
There you go. All right, perfect.
Yeah, you should have this, even if you never use it. It's yours. You at least would have it.
Yes, that's right. No, I'll use it.
Yeah. It's the best shave you've ever had. It's amazing.
All right.
Now, I'm sorry to have interrupted. Let's continue on. Converse.
Back to the question.
So the question is, you know, you guys have talked about wanting to make Azure the best backend platform for everybody, not just Windows, right? Like iOS, Android. What are you doing to make that happen, and why are you doing it?
Yeah, great question. So I'll start with the why and then I'll tell you the what. So, I mean, the why is really going to come down to we really want to go meet the needs of people who are going to run on the platform. And so no matter what customers are doing, what partners are deploying, we're going to support everything that, that people want to deploy. And so whether it be, you know, the Linux platform that we offer on top of infrastructure as a service, whether it be some of the partners that we offer on top of infrastructure as a service, or our mobile platform, which offers Android, iOS, and Windows Phone support, we want to make sure that no matter what you're writing, how you're writing, when you're writing, we're going to be there to enable it with our backend. So it's in some ways it's making sure that you know the Azure platform is going to be used for everything and enabled for everything, whether it's Windows or not.
Yeah, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. You guys, since I should ask you an IaaS question, since that's your
yes, please,
specialty.
Yeah.
Right. So I saw this blog post you wrote recently about this thing called Azure Resource Managers.
Mm-hmm,
manager,
mm-hmm.
Right? And there's this thing that involves templates. I read it a few times. I have to admit, I couldn't quite grasp it. Maybe you can explain why we should care about this. Because the way you wrote it up, you said, hey, we're going to make IaaS easier for people. And for people on the show who are listening who don't know, IaaS is how Microsoft offers hosted versions of Windows Server and Linux Server on top of Azure in virtual machines. That's what that means.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
what are you doing with Resource Manager?
And I'm sorry that my blog post wasn't very good. I feel bad now. I should go. I'm going to go work on it. So I'll write another one. I'll write another one.
Okay.
But so the overall idea with the resource managers, you know, when people are deploying virtual machines today in Azure, they come in and they deploy and they install things on them. They want to deploy an app. You know, let's say you want to deploy something like Elasticsearch or SharePoint Farm, and you deploy. You have to deploy multiple virtual machines. You have to connect them with the network. You've got to lock down your network. And you want to install things on the box using PowerShell and get sort of everything situated, and then finally you have yourself an app. But then you want to redo it, right? And so maybe the first time you did it, you've got Mary helping you out. You've got, Paul doing X, Y, Z. And then they're not there the next time you want to do it. And suddenly you can't do it ever again. And so one of the things that we're trying to enable with this new resource manager and this template language is to make that a repeatable process. It's all sort of listed up in a single text file, a JSON top file that lists out all of the resources. So it'll say, here's a VM, and it's going to talk to this other VM. And the network's going to connect them this way, and there'll be a load balancer over here. And so it'll connect it all together and then allow you to deploy it repeatably multiple times. And we have a bunch of samples to get you started. We have a bunch of documentation. It's integrated with Visual Studio. So it's really easy to get started, and hopefully once you're down that path, it's really easy to go repeat things over and over again.
So they're like recipes? Kind of?
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. I mean, I think you can think of it recipes.
Mary
exactly,
Jo gets that one.
Okay.
She's a cook.
Like, got it. So like banana bread. Yeah, got it. So mm-hmm. SharePoint Farm is your banana bread, and AT is it's the nuts.
Now you're making me hungry. Stop it.
Yeah. So yeah, exactly right. That's a great way to put it. Yeah.
Okay. So this is connected somehow to containers, right? In some way.
Everything is connected to containers. It's all about lakes and bridges. Baby.
Yeah, lakes, data lakes. And, you know, we've talked on Windows Weekly before about containers, and I did not the best job at explaining why containers are so key to you guys, because you're building container support, not just into Azure, but you're building it now into Windows Server. You're working with Docker. Mm-hmm. You're doing some interesting stuff around your own containers on top of Hyper-V, which is kind of an interesting different take. So can you explain for our viewers and listeners in kind of like a higher level and better explanation than I did, why are containers hot? What's the deal with containers?
Absolutely. I can't promise it'll be better than how you described it, but I'll at least try.
I think we can promise that, actually, Corey.
Yeah.
I'm still having a hard time getting my mind wrapped around it.
I said I wouldn't promise it. Yeah.
And specifically how it's different from Hyper-V or some other,
totally.
You know, virtualization.
Well, and so, you know, what we're seeing from containers, at least right now, even in Azure, and what's made them really exciting is the agility, the additional agility that they offer. And so, you know, one of the things that we see for the customers who are starting to use it, in some cases, they take the same app that they had, right? It doesn't take you necessarily to rethink your application model or rethink the world. Take the the same app you've got, put it into a container, and suddenly you can deploy on your local desktop and sort of do some development there, make things work. You can take that exact same container and within seconds or even milliseconds, deploy that into your test environment, deploy it into your production environment, whether it be in, you know, public cloud running in Azure, could be running in, you know, some other public cloud, it could be running in part of your private data center. And the container gives you that consistency of experience. You'll deploy the same way in the same amount of time everywhere you go. And so what it really offers at sort of the beginning point is really just that agility to move those workloads in between those different environments, which I think is really exciting. And I think one of the main reasons why it's picked up, and that's sort of where Docker has really fit in and really made a good strong case for their platform, because they offer that consistency of deployment across all those different environments. And so that's kind of the first step, I think, of what's making containers so exciting, so hot, if you will. It fits into our platform in a few ways. Like you mentioned, it does fit in as, you know, we have a Windows Server container, which we demoed this week, which enables sort of a very similar sort of very fast deployment, very, very quick to get onto the box and go. And then we have the Hyper-V container, which is something that we haven't yet shown, which will take advantage of some of the sort of deeper virtualization stack. We won't have the shared kernel. We won't have shared memory when it comes to the Hyper-V containers. And so we'll give you a little bit more isolation when you're deploying. But again, that promise of being able to deploy anywhere and quickly will still hold up. So you can deploy the same container as a Windows Server container or as a Hyper-V container. It's really a deploy time decision that's going to make that really exciting. And so that promise of agility will always be there. Did that help a little bit, or was it still a little bit convoluted?
I think we're getting there.
That was the nice way of saying it wasn't good.
No, I totally get it. That's true. From the point of view of why you'd want to use it.
Yeah.
And so I think
one of the biggest sessions here at Ignite, they was that container session he's talking about, where it was Mark Rusinovich on the stage with Jeffrey Snover, who's
We're not alone. Engineer. Everybody wants to understand.
That room, how many people? Like 5,000 people were in that session?
It
was insane.
Yeah.
Everybody wanted to know about containers. And everybody also wanted to know about NanoServer, which is Jeffrey Snover's thing, right?
So that is Jeffrey's thing, yeah.
Yeah. So when Microsoft talks about containers and Windows Server, they also are talking now about this new thing that you're going to be having in Windows Server 2016. It's a new way of deploying Windows Server with a GUI-less, very stripped down environment that they call Nano Server, right? Can you talk a bit more about that? Like, why does that matter to people who are trying to do cloud and on-prem stuff?
Yeah, good question. Jeffrey actually doesn't let us talk about that. No, just kidding. when we look at Nano Server, it actually, the original concept around Nano Server and the work that they did started in Azure. It was some work that we had done with them on sort of how do we make the host much smaller, much thinner, right? Much smaller surface area. And so I think it's running at like 1/20th the size of the server core. And so it's just really tiny. And so it'll deploy faster. It, again, has a much smaller surface area, you know, like you said, GUI-less. And so it really is going to be geared towards enabling cloud-like scenarios, and containers being sort of a prime one, where its entire goal is really just to bootstrap the system to make sure that you can deploy those containers down on the box.
Cool. Okay.
It's a great name, too, Nano.
It is. Yeah, we had the code name for that one, Tuva. We knew Tuva.
Love that.
We knew that one.
Yeah.
Another really big announcement here for you guys was this thing called Azure Stack. And here's my understanding. Azure Stack is a bunch of stuff that basically the equivalent of what Microsoft does in its data center, but it's you guys giving this operating system level technology to customers and saying to them, you could put this in your data center. It's not actually Azure in your data center, but it's pretty close, right?
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, so I was going to say, who do you think is going to use this thing? I mean, is it only the biggest customers and like hosting providers, or do you think smaller, mid-sized businesses could even use this thing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the goal is to run the full spectrum of sort of folks who would want to use this. And, you know, you explained it exactly right. I mean, I think, you know, as I mentioned, the Azure Resource Manager before this new API, this actually ties really tightly into the Azure Stack because it's the same API that will be supported there to deploy those same template languages. And really what we've done is we actually shared code between us and the server team to go build that, which was both really fun. There are challenges to it, of course, to be able to sort of share that code and ship in different cycles. But, you know, we sort of built it all together to be able to support that same Azure functionality. But of course, built on the sort of the promise of Windows Server and the promise of System Center and management experiences that you'd sort of expect from those parts of the platform. And so it sort of combines what you'd expect in sort of the ability to run System Center with the Azure components that are sort of the runtime and deployment technology. And we do expect it to run sort of a nice wide range of scenarios, whether it be small to large, really trying to gear it towards people who do have things that want to keep local, do have things that want to keep private. And so we hope that we'll enable that bridge and enable that sort of simple deployment technology between both. So,
okay. I have two more things I want to ask you. I know you have to run off pretty soon. But
oh, no problem.
One of them. Oh, good. Good. Yeah. One of the.
Give him more beer. I think we could keep him all afternoon.
I think we could. One of the really kind of, I think, not well appreciated maybe, but I think some people understood this, but not everybody, was this appreciated announcement, was this advanced threat analytics announcement that you guys made here. I know it's not exactly an Azure announcement, but I bet you know about this a little bit.
I know about everything. That's
okay, good to know. So, advanced threat analytics, like why were the people who did understand this thing excited about it?
Yeah, so you know the way actually I've been trying to sort of wrap my head around it and explain it as well, because it's sort of a science fiction sort of thing come to life.
Yes.
The best way to think about it is when you get that text message from your credit card company that says, "Hey, you just spent some money in Turkey and you're also spent some money in Seattle at the same time. That doesn't seem possible. Are you sure you're in both places?" And it'll actually, you know, they'll go forward and check with you or even cancel your credit card, right? That
right.
same sort of technology we're now applying to identity login technology, right? So it actually detects whether it was possible for you to log in one country and then log in another country with the flight times that it takes to get there. I don't know if it takes into account which flight and how much they're typically delayed, but at least the amount of time that it would take you to get from one place to another, it will then flag those as warnings. And so a lot of that same sort of machine learning technology that the credit card companies have really gotten good at, we're now applying those same types of solutions to be able to detect when your identity may have been stolen in the Azure and Office 365 login technology. So it's pretty exciting. It's pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. So do you have to be an Azure Active Directory customer to take advantage
That's right.
of this,
right? That's right. So it's tied into the Azure Active Directory, which is, you know, the login authentication for both Azure and Office 365. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's I think that could be really interesting. People who are kind of grokking it when you guys were explaining it were like, "Wow, can you imagine this? It's like going to really help us thwart a lot of cyber attacks in our organizations,"
right?
Yeah.
So it turns out actually, and if you've read Mark's books, which I assume both of you have, most of these cyber attacks end up do come from social engineering, right? People being able to either guess passwords or steal passwords in some way or another. And this is really an attempt to thwart some of that. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it's the kind of thing that it makes sense in enterprise because you can enforce that. I'm wondering, you know, how many people turn on Second Factor, which is available now with Office 365 and in the real world. But the IT can say, "No, I think we better do that."
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Yep. Okay, so the other one is this. You guys brought this up in the keynote, the whole idea of shadow IT. You know, this idea that people in their organizations are running a lot of cloud apps that maybe aren't authorized for them to be running, right? And
you guys
talked about this new capability coming in Azure called Azure AD Cloud App Discovery. What's that going to let you do if you're an admin? Like what's the advantage to you to run that?
A classic Microsoft name, right? Seven
it
words.
Is.
But yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
Azure
Cloud App Discovery. App Discovery.
Yeah.
It's not even an acronym, is it? You can't even anyway.
You really can't.
I'll work on it. Project Tokyo. That's
A-CAD.
What we're
called. ACAD's not bad. Azure Cloud App Discovery.
ACAD. Okay.
Yeah.
anyway, sorry. Back to the question at hand here. One of the things when we look at this is that we're trying to offer solutions that are going to enable all of IT, right? And especially with Azure, we want to enable both the departmental IT to go be able to be agile, deploy quickly, you know, with the Docker solutions and so on. But sometimes that departmental IT will start deploying things that maybe central IT didn't quite know about, right? And shadow IT has kind of been the phrase that's come up for sort of any IT that's happening in an organization that maybe central IT didn't know about, whether it be departmental departmental or individuals. And, you know, candidly, it's not necessarily bad, but it's also certainly not necessarily good. I think enabling the sort of departmental ITs to move quickly is great, but central IT is the one that's going to be responsible for all the security requirements and all sort of the compliance expectations that come through. And so they have a responsibility in a lot of these situations to take care of that and make sure that they're watching those aspects. And so some of the solutions that we're offering, sort of like ECAD, which was that what it, ECAD, was that what we called it?
Let's start using that.
See whether it picks up.
As soon as you start using an acronym, that's it. It's too late. There's no going back.
The gentleman next to me is texting like crazy. He's like, tell him to stop using that. It's not right. Yeah. That's not the brand. Okay. Anyway, sorry. I'm in big trouble. This is what the beer does to me.
This is what triples do.
That's right. So what this enables you to do, again, back to the question.
Beats tuba, I'm just saying. Okay, go ahead.
Indeed. So what this enables you to do, actually, it allows you to keep track, right? It allows you to give you sort of eyeballs on what the entire organization's doing, whether they're the departmental IT, whether it's coming from central IT, and all of the cloud services that they're using across the entire ecosystem. And so what it enables you to do, and actually for free, you can take this tool and do a quick analysis. It tells you what's running, right? It tells you who's using what and how they're using it. And again, coming back to sort of the security and trust aspects, you know, the central IT is responsible for protecting against information leakage and these sorts of threats that are actually, you know, quite serious and concerning, especially some of the things that are going on in the world these days. And so giving them an opportunity to at least be able to track and monitor how people are using the cloud and be able to say, you know, that's okay, no problem here, but maybe this one's not okay, and give them the power to be able to do that since they are the ones responsible for that level of, again, that high level of security. And so that's I think, what's cool about it.
Yeah, I heard somebody, maybe it was Mark, I don't know who it was, but saying there's two kinds of IT orgs. There's ones who have shadow IT, and there's ones who don't know they have shadow IT, right?
That's right. That is what Mark says.
It's like everybody's doing this. Everybody's right. Got their IT department, like going around the IT department, running cloud apps in there, and this is just kind of helping them kind of take inventory, I think, right?
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Without necessarily damaging the agility that, of course, those IT departments are getting. So, yeah.
Yep. It's pretty cool. Anything else you want to mention from here that you think people might want to know about? We touched on a lot of the big announcements, I think.
Yeah, the only other thing that maybe that was pretty exciting, at least for me, again, being sort of the Azure guy, ExpressRoute, which is something that we've had for a while to be able to connect, you know, a big MPLS-based line into Azure. We actually just announced support for that same connectivity to be done using Office 365. And so you can now use ExpressRoute to be able to connect straight to Office 365, take advantage of that dedicated fat pipe from those service providers that you're already using, and be able to connect straight into your email exchange solution and, of course, SharePoint as well. And so it's a really exciting sort of combination of Microsoft services, giving you, again, a pipe to Microsoft. And so it really allows you to sort of take advantage of all those services being in the same data centers right next to each other. And so that's been really exciting, at least for me, on the Azure side.
Cool. Very cool. Well, thanks, Corey. That was awesome.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah, it really helps to have somebody from Azure explain this stuff.
I do my best
as the enterprise representative here, but
it's not.
It's hard sometimes.
Yeah. You do a great job, Mary Jo.
Somebody asked, could you run, and I suppose this is true, but could you run Exchange or SQL inside a Docker container or a container?
Oh, good question. I mean, technically you can.
You wouldn't want to, probably, right?
Yeah, you know, the only thing...
Because that's a persistent process you want to keep running.
That's right. But having said that, I've seen people use containers just because they start fast.
Right.
And so, you know, you could conceivably spin up a container that's running SQL Server that then you plan to run forever. You're using it because you built it on your machine, your local box, and you're deploying in the cloud. But once you deploy it, it's there. So I've seen it. It's not necessarily a completely foreign concept. It won't be the most efficient usage of containers.
Right.
But there's still a lot of benefit of it. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we use that kind of idea, and I think we'll probably use containers because for instance, if you need more bandwidth, we have more audio listeners all of a sudden. To be able to spin up a container temporarily that can then serve that out, and it's no big deal when you shut it down. It's just kind of like on-demand computing power, compute power.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right.
But a server is probably not ideal because that's the kind of thing you know you can't sync them with other you know, it's just kind of a tricky
There's less of the fast scaling that's required. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Corey, it's great to have you. Thank you.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. I realize I talk a lot with my hands. I hope it hasn't been distracting.
No, and it's good because they left room above your head so that you could you'd have room.
I keep looking at the screen and I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm using one of those virtualization platforms.
No, we like right.
Yeah, exactly.
We like that. We like that a lot. Come back soon and give my regards to Mark.
I will. Yeah. I'll pat his hair for you.
Yeah. Pat his hair. That's nice.
Yeah. There you go.
Pat the bunny. Welcome. Yeah. I feel like, so we're going to take a break. I think Paul's here. I feel like he might be here. I see something that looks oddly like his lap.
Well, that's pleasant. Just a pleasant view.
There he is. Oh, yay.
Luckily, he had pants.
Crotch cam.
Anyway, we're going to take a break. Thank you. We'll let Corey go.
Thank you, Corey.
Take the beer with you, please,
you guys,
by all means.
Yep.
And we'll get to Paul and Mary Jo and continue on with Windows Weekly in just a little
bit. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Corey. Take care.
Yep.
Bye-bye. Our show today, as often the case, brought to you by ZipRecruiter. This is actually a good time to do a ZipRecruiter ad because I think we were talking a lot about enterprise stuff, and it's, you know, if you're the person in the enterprise who needs to hire people, or if you're a small business owner like me, you do it yourself, you got to know about ZipRecruiter because this saves you so much time, so much effort. Look, we live in amazing times. We are completely capable these days of hiring online. I mean, there's all these job boards. I mean, it's great, but ZipRecruiter solves the problem, which is, which job board do you use if you're going to hire somebody? Where do you go? ZipRecruiter makes it possible for you to post once on more than 100 job boards, including social networks like Twitter and Facebook and Craigslist. It's an incredible solution. Even more so, and you'll appreciate this if you've ever done hiring, the applicants don't call you. They don't email you. They roll right into ZipRecruiter's interface where it's very easy for you to screen them, rate them, rank them, and then hire the right person. So it solves a huge issue, not only of where to post that listing, but how to handle the results you get. So much so that ZipRecruiter actually has this great thing, this traffic boost, which will get you more candidates. And when I first told people about the traffic boost, they said, oh, God, I don't want more phone calls and more emails. So you don't have to worry about that. The more you get, the better, thanks to ZipRecruiter's really great interface. Post once. Within 24 hours, your candidates will roll into their easy-to-use interface. More than 400,000 companies use ZipRecruiter, including Twint. And you can try it now. Get this for free. For free. 4 days free. And you might say, 4 days? No, that, believe me, 4 days, you're going to get hundreds and hundreds of applicants. Get that perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Great support to nice people. I really like it, and I think you will too. ZipRecruiter.com/windows for your 4-day free trial right now. ZipRecruiter.com/windows. Paul Thurrott, welcome back. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Did
I miss anything fun?
Nope.
You did. You missed containers and nano server.
Oh, my God. Did you not miss anything fun?
Shadow
Corey
IT.
Corey seemed like a good guy, but that was...
Corey's great. Love Corey.
And guys, come on. You guys have done almost whole shows on Xbox.
I know. It's only fair. I tell you, the people who are interested in this stuff were getting great material. So,
yeah.
So, and did you go home early, Paul? How come you're home already?
Because I need to go to Vegas tomorrow so I can drive
my
car.
Oh, my God. Jiminy Christmas.
Ooh. It's all good, Leo.
I don't know how you do it.
I don't either.
This was going to be the bad month. This was going to be the month from hell.
Yep.
All right. Well, welcome back, Paul. Mary Jo's still... How long are you going to stay in Chicago?
I'm leaving tonight. Right. Yep.
Okay. Yep. Chicago's a great city, though. You guys had fun there. And I mean, isn't that... I mean, I just love it.
Yeah. It's been really fun. It's just when you have 23,000 people here for a conference, it just you have to factor in a lot of time to get around.
Yeah. Chicago's fantastic. I would have loved to have seen Chicago. but, yeah. You know, mostly it was, well, we did some fun stuff. We had some meetups. Yep. And
it is frustrating, though, to get to a city like Chicago where there's great music and great food.
And I heard a lot of good stories about food and drink and then not, sights.
Yeah. It's kind of, that's kind of can be frustrating.
Yeah. I hear we might be here again next year for this.
Are they going to do Ignite in Chicago twice now?
They haven't announced that, but I think we might be back next year.
You know, we had Jason Calacanis on Twit on Sunday. We kind of had a little reunion. Hmm. Yeah, and I love Jason, and I was really glad to get him on. And he's, because he is an investor and he runs a launch conference, so he's in touch with startups and stuff, he had an interesting insight. He said, actually, now that we've heard the news since, it all makes sense. He said, Satya Nadella loves San Francisco. It's one of the reasons they kept doing things in San Francisco. And he says there's another reason. He's taking a lot of meetings in the area.
Mm-hmm. So, listen, I think it's important to make 5,000 people move around according to his back and call. You know, so it's okay.
But you have to think that this, now this Salesforce news, maybe now what Jason said on Sunday, because that hadn't come out yet.
Is this any more real than it was before? Because I had heard that there was nothing imminent here.
We're going to talk about that. We've got it in our notes.
All right, we'll save it. Hey, while we're just fumfering around, can you unplug and replug, Paul? Because we're getting that popping thing. You know, that electronic on you. And I don't know if it's your interface or...
It's not me, right?
No, it's Paul.
Okay.
Isn't that funny? Paul's home.
I know.
You're on the road.
Yeah.
Paul, it's like Paul just went, drop the microphone.
Yeah.
Do I need to do something?
You need to unplug and replug your interface or something because it's
crazy. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking to someone else.
You, my friend. You. Can you unplug?
I'm not sure. What do you mean?
Well, your headset or whatever it is that you're using. You're using a microphone, right? The microphone's connected to the head bone. The head bone's connected to the thigh bone. The thigh bone's connected to a USB audio interface. If you could holy cow. Whoops. Undo it and then redo it.
Bang.
Yeah.
How's that?
Better.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's less.
It's a known thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you meant Alex.
I know. No. You have a small.
Usually when you say jump, I say how high.
No.
A little tired.
I know. I bet you are. Holy cow. So where should we pick this up, Mary Jo? You know where
we
left
off. I think we should talk about the next thing on the agenda is the Windows as a Service strategy thing where we're going to talk about Windows Update for Business, which was announced here.
Sorry, Paul. She's taken over the show.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, so another big announcement. Well, this was kind of a surprise. We didn't think Terry Myerson was going to be at Build. We knew Joe Belfiore was going to be here. And he was showing off Windows 10. We knew that he was going to do that. But then in the middle of the first day keynote, they announced, and here's Terry Myerson, and he's going to announce something. And what he announced was this thing called Windows Update for Business. So you know how Microsoft has Windows Update now, and they have a lot of other updating tools like WSUS and Windows Intune, now called just plain old Intune. ConfigMan, which is Configuration Manager. Now they've got this thing called Windows Update for Business. This is a way to let the IT pros and the admins have a little more control over how Microsoft is going to update Windows 10. So if you're in the free consumer preview, you're just going to get all the updates. Whenever Microsoft pushes an update, you're going to get the update. But, you know, businesses don't want that, right? They're freaking out about that. And they're like, wait, you're going to be pushing all these updates to our users? We don't want that. We want to have some level of test and some level of ability to kind of control who gets what in which ring. And this is what that program is. And it's also going to be free. So if you have Windows 10 Pro or Windows 10 Enterprise, and you want to have some more level of control over how your users get the Windows 10 update, you're going to be able to do that through this mechanism. So I think that was pretty well received by this crowd because this is a crowd who, yes, we're kind of kicking the tires now in Windows 10. Yes, we're somewhat interested, but we don't want this everybody getting all these updates, security fixes, and new features whenever they want. We want to be able to say, we only want the security features, or we only want certain fixes at a set time. We only want our machines to update in evenings or mornings. And this is what this mechanism is, where you as the IT manager get that control. That's kind of how I view that. So that was Windows Update for Business. We knew Microsoft was going to have these different levels of control, but we just didn't know the specifics. And now that we're starting to get close to what we think is the late July launch of Windows 10 on PCs and laptops, it's time for Microsoft to start explaining some of these things so that they can get IT to start really looking at this and not just consumers.
Is this going to replace WSUS?
No. It's going to be a complement to that. So you can still use the mechanisms of your choice, but this just gives you, as the IT person, the right to say, I want to stagger the updates, or I don't want, you know, because we know with Windows 10, they're going to be pushing not just security updates and fixes, but they're going to also be pushing features through the pipe. And say they have a new feature and they want you to have it, but your IT department says, not yet, we need to test that before you give us that feature. This is how you're going to do that. So yeah, that's Windows Update for Business in a nutshell. And the kind of the funny part of the keynote was Terry Myerson went up on stage and he said, you know, Google can't really guarantee to you that as customers, you're going to get updates delivered to all your devices. They can push updates out, but they're not there saying, I'm going to make sure these get onto the devices. And so he's trying to differentiate what Microsoft's doing there and making the case that we're doing what the IT users especially really want, which is guarantee the updates come. It also kind of fix our patching process by getting you to have updates applied in a cumulative way, in a regular way. Because right now, as we've talked about it on the show, the patching process at Microsoft is kind of a mess. So they believe that by doing this with the more regular updates and by flighting things, getting them tested in the early rings and then applying them to business, that they're going to fix some of these bad patching incidents that they've been having out there recently with Windows.
Awesome.
We'll see.
Awesome.
We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it makes sense. I mean, I hate to see a kind of Tower of Babel of different services doing similar things, but I think it makes sense to update features separately.
I think so too. Yeah, because not everybody wants new features and fixes, right?
Right.
Like we do. We might as consumers, but IT departments not so much.
Yeah, and you assume that an IT professional is smart enough to handle, you know, the variety. Somebody in the chat room said, my God, it sounds like a technical person is in charge at Microsoft.
What?
Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah. It's like somebody who actually has... uses this stuff. But also, you know, Microsoft with Windows 10, they're out there talking to business customers this time.
Yeah.
It's not, hey, surprise, here's the operating system. They're asking them, what do you guys want? What's going to get you to upgrade? What can we do to make you guys...
Lesson learned, huh? Jump? Isn't that great?
Yep. Lesson learned.
Wow.
Yep.
Wow. Yep.
That's that.
Did we cover? It looks like we covered all of this stuff, right?
No, we didn't.
Wait a minute! Yikes! Schmikes! Double mics, pikes! And this came up on the radio show. Guy who had a home theater PC and was just struggling, and I said, you know, it doesn't seem like the writing is on the wall that Microsoft does not want you to do this. They kill Windows Home Server. They make it harder and harder to get Windows Media Center. And then somebody sent me a link saying, well, look what they just did. Now, it wasn't confirmed. It was a Microsoft executive talking to Ed Bott.
Supposedly.
Have you? Well, but that's the question. Do you?
Well, no, it's been confirmed since.
It has been confirmed. And Ed's sharp enough to know if the person talking to him is just gassing or if it's somebody.
Yep, sure.
So what happened?
Yep. Well, I mean, what happened is about 5 years ago, they stopped working on Media Center.
2009? I didn't realize that.
Actually, it might have been 2000. It might have been longer
updated
than that.
It's
been
then.
A long time. So, unfortunately, they know how this is with a certain minority part of the user base, but also a vocal part of the
A very
base.
Vocal.
It's important to them. And you know, when Steven Sinofsky was still around, he talked about the metrics of Media Center and boiled it down to some tiny percentage of people ever used it. And most of the people who launched Media Center had done so by mistake and never did it again.
That's right. We talked about that the telemetry on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so...
The hell is this? Take over my screen.
Yeah. I mean, look, Media Center was fantastic in its day. And, it, you know, it was updated in some pretty meaningful ways over the years to support cable card. It was integrated into mainstream versions of Windows, which is important. But, you know, I think the fact remains for most people, controlling a TV with a computer is complex and unnecessary. And even though there is a small contingent of people who really love it, you know, most people don't even know about it or use it at all. And even Gabe All's stuff about this was it had sort of an implicit kind of put down to Media Center users because, you know, what he said, similar to the Sanofsky thing, was the most common usage of Media Center is to play DVD movies. And, of course, the people that really love it and advocate for it use it to record live TV, not for DVD movies. Anyway, it's gone. So what that means is it won't be included in Windows 10. It won't be available as an add-on for Windows 10. If you want to run Media Center, you need to have Windows 8 or earlier, essentially.
And I've been hearing, you probably have too, all these people saying, well, that's it. I'm staying on Windows 7. And that's, I'm not moving, you know.
Yeah. There's always a reason to do
but
that.
But when you tell them, but this program hasn't been updated in 6 years.
They don't even care. They don't care. It works.
Because it does work.
Yep.
It does work. Interestingly, I just connected it again. I have a TV card in my computer. I bought a crazy looking shark looking thing that you stick in the window.
Sorry.
For as an antenna, and I just reran. You know, I used Media Center again for the first time in a while, and you know, it's kind of nostalgic. It's the beginning of the full screen interfaces that we later saw on Windows 8. In some ways, you know, it does have an interface that would very naturally work with touch. I mean, it was designed for a remote control, but you can kind of see the beginnings of some of those ideas that later appeared in things like Zune or Windows Phone and then, of course, Windows 8. But yeah, I mean, I think the future of this stuff is Xbox One. So,
yep. But
from Microsoft.
Are there from Microsoft? And that's the important point to make. There are options from other companies, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
You're not. Mary Jo,
every TV tuner card comes with something. I mean, it's not great, but there's software there.
Yeah.
No, I'm just answering the tweets of people who are revisiting this again now that we're talking about it.
Well, that's the point, is that the people who use it want it.
I know, they do. And I guess because Microsoft did carry on allowing it to work with Windows 8, even though they didn't update it, people were kind of hoping that's what they were going to do.
That should have sent a message, right?
Well,
you know, they
make
it this add-on pack. It was like, you know, it was just the way they positioned it. It was sort of like a glorified DVD pack.
Yeah.
You had to pay for it, right? You couldn't just get it for free. You had to have Windows 8.1 Pro or 8 Pro, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so if you didn't have that, you had to upgrade to that first, and that cost $100. They really made it, I don't think, you know.
Yeah. They made it not attractive, but people kept...
Sure. Not unattractive enough.
Yeah.
I got to say, the problem is it's probably just going to disappear. Just letting it kind of tag along with Windows, I think, is a little bit of a mistake. And I understand why they don't want to do that, right? It's a support nightmare. They have to keep supporting really dated code and so forth.
You're a support nightmare.
And I'm also really dated code. But what I'd like to see them do is put it out there in the world. You know, put it on some open source repository and let people have at it and let them improve it.
That's a great idea.
It's too bad they don't do that. What you would probably find is that it's a disaster of, you know, you got to remember this thing dates back to 2002.
Right.
So the original version was based on Windows XP. It probably has all kinds of problems.
And I mean, Xbox One is not a feature-for-feature replacement either. You can't DVR.
No, right? Today it is literally not. But the TV watching capabilities are there. TV recording capabilities are coming. And I think at that point, that's when it happens. I mean, we have in the United States an ad hoc solution, essentially, that Microsoft provided where you get a Hopage, or however you pronounce it, TV card that's based on USB. It looks like it itself looks like something that's 15 years old. And with that and your Xbox here in the United States, you can watch live TV. And obviously in Europe, they have a Microsoft or a Xbox branded solution. But they're going to bring a Microsoft solution here to the United States as well. And presumably or hopefully at that time, we get the full experience, so TV recording and all that stuff. And I think that kind of satisfies the need. I mean, the Xbox One is certainly a powerful PC type device. And so it should be able to handle that. And it also helps justify the difference in price between, say, an Xbox One and a Roku or an Apple TV or whatever you might use otherwise to just access online services. There's a mosquito in my office.
That's all right. The smoke in mine. So I got like 18 engineers going, I don't know.
It's like,
it smells like it's burning. Uh-oh. But,
yeah, keep talking, Leo. You'll be fine.
Couldn't be a. You know what? Somebody lit a match on the roof. That's all.
Sure, that's all.
There's just something burning on the roof. Nothing to worry about.
I mean,
heat goes up, right?
Yeah, so. Exactly. Dynamite goes down, so I'd check for dynamite, but heat goes up. That's what we told our neighbor. Our neighbor came over and said, would you mind clearing those dead trees and branches that are at the top of your property? I said, I believe that fire goes uphill, so we're fine.
Neighbors are the best, Leo.
I love them. Yeah. Love them. All right, so there you go. Goodbye, Windows Media Center. We hardly knew ye. And I know there's going to be, people are be peeved about that. But and then I see an item here on OneDrive. Is this yours, Mary Jo? Or
Paul's? Is Paul.
Paulie?
Believe it or not, this is me.
Mr. OneDrive?
No, I'm following this one really carefully because obviously last fall in the wake of the Windows 10 stuff, out of October, Microsoft announced that they were going to get rid of the sync client for OneDrive that's in Windows 8.1. This is the most awesome piece of software they've ever made, in my opinion. And it's really disappointing because if you go to Windows 10 from Windows 8.1, you go back to a Windows 7 style sync client. And that's also what they have on the Mac, by the way, for OneDrive. The only thing worse than a Windows 7 style sync client on Windows is the OneDrive for Business sync client, which is the dumbest piece of software ever created. And basically what this thing does is let you sync all of your OneDrive for Business OneDrive for Business storage to your PC or none of it. There's no selective sync at all. And so you can either have dumb or dumber. These are the two choices. So going forward, what they're going to do is create a unified client that handles both. They're already doing this on the mobile side. So if you get OneDrive for iOS or for, I think, Windows Phone as well now, or Android, you get a OneDrive app. You don't have two apps, and you can access both of your accounts from the same place, personal and business. And the intention is to do that on the Windows desktop, and also, by the way, on the Mac desktop as well. And so they're going to base it on the OneDrive for consumer experience. You'll have two entries if you have both accounts. You'll be able to access both through File Explorer. It will have the same type of, unfortunately, it is selective sync like from Windows 7, where you have to pick the folders and you can only see that kind of stuff. But the thing that they did at the show is really lay out what they were going to do and when. And there's more to this announcement than what I'm talking about, because I'm really focused specifically on the desktop sync client. But in tandem with this, there's also going to be a Windows Universal app for Windows 10. There's going to be a big update to the web interface for OneDrive for Business, which is huge. And it will make it look more like the OneDrive interface. No shocker there. So there's a bunch of other stuff going on. But over time, we're going to get some of that stuff that they took out of the, from the 8.1 sync client. And we're going to gain other things. For example, the ability to see files that are shared with you, which is a big complaint in both sync clients today, that you can't see that kind of stuff. And so this stuff is all happening over the year. And Windows 10 will ship kind of as we see it now with just OneDrive for consumers. But in the third quarter of this year, they're going to ship a preview version that will support OneDrive for Business and OneDrive for consumers, Mac and PC, desktop. And then in the fourth quarter, they're going to ship the final version. And that will be the, that unified client. And it was they actually had a couple sessions, but the one I was able to watch on video laid out the schedule, all of the features they're going to put out, not just the stuff I'm talking about, and then some stuff that's going to come after that as well. And they have a plan for what they call offline files, which is essentially the ability to view in a read-only view files that are only in the cloud. So if you don't sync them to the desktop, you can still kind of see them.
Sorry.
You're right. Is there fire in your office now?
No, I don't know about you. I am so hoarse from talking so much over the past 2 weeks. I'm losing my voice.
Yeah. Sure.
Throat coat, not beer. Throat coat. Beer will dry.
Beer is helping.
The alcohol dries your tissues.
But I'm also
no, you need downing. Whiskey, Mary Jo. That burns everything right off your throat.
Yeah. No, I'm having water. A lot of water.
Yeah, water. That's a good idea. Warm, sorry, guys. Warm water good is good. Spit warm
I thought
water.
It was Leo, actually. It's okay.
No, no, I'm fine. We found out that the source of the flame was a bagel that somebody had burned in the kitchen.
As it would be. Yeah. I need to destroy this insect. It's really bothering
me. Go ahead.
Me. Anyway, it's just kind of slowly bobbing around in my vision. Anyway, that's most of it on OneDrive. So, I know that there are a lot of complaints out there, and the people who use OneDrive on the Windows desktop in particular. I think the mobile clients are pretty good already, but this unified engine is a big deal. A sync engine, I should say, because honestly, the back-end services are, in fact, never going to be the same. But from the user's perspective, they'll look and work the same, and I think that's the important bit. And you'll be able to see both personal and work files at the same time, or side-by-side anyway. Which
and
I also think is kind of a cool
thing. The replacement for the placeholder thing, you think, is the offline, right?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of conjecture here because they specifically mention offline files with mobile clients, meaning iOS and Android at first, and then with the universal app on Windows 10, which is everything, you know, phone, tablet, PC. They never say it for the desktop sync client, but I have to think that's the next logical step, and that would be past the end of the year. But at the very least, if you're on Windows 10, you'll have the desktop sync like we have it now, sort of, but for both client for both services. And then you can run the universal app if you want to see files that are available offline. You'll have to be online to see them, right?
Because
they're in the cloud. Yeah.
Yep. That makes sense, though.
It makes sense. the system I'd like to see is something I'd like to think of as placeholders, where you see the files, you know,
when
you're
now,
offline or online. I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
It was so good. It still is so good if you have Windows 8.1.
Yeah.
Okay. Surface 3. I'm getting questions, a lot of questions. Like somebody said, should I get a Surface 3 or Surface 3 Pro? It goes on sale. Get both. Microsoft's doing a trade-in, not a lot, though, for the Surface RT. What they said, up to 300, something like that.
No, it's not even. It's up to 150.
Oh, not a lot of money for that.
You're almost better. I honestly, this time, those tablets really don't go for much more on Gazelle or whatever, but... Yeah. I would look. I'd go to Amazon and go to Gazelle, sell it on eBay. You know, I'd try it around because the difference between these other services and just going to Microsoft is that you get money or a gift card for that service. With this one, it's literally only applied to the upgrade. And so if you can get a little bit more, say, at Gazelle, it might be worth doing it.
Yeah. Or keep it. Was there any compelling reason to keep an RT tablet?
I can't think of one, Leo. How
Not
about
one.
You?
Not one.
I still have mine. The problem with the RT tablet, like we've brought up before, is you're not going to get Windows 10 on that thing. You're going to get some subset of features at some time, and we don't know when, and we don't know which features. So if you're waiting for the big update to it, you're not going to get a big update.
Speaking of big updates, a couple of questions about the RT update. You know, did Microsoft say anything about the RT update that's sort of going to be like Windows 10? The answer, of course, is no. But I would, and I don't mean this in a mean way, but I think from Microsoft's perspective, these people, Windows RT customers, are sort of the new media center people. And they just kind of want you to get the hint. like they're trying to be nice, but, I don't expect anything earth shattering. They've not discussed this at all since that January event. And I can't. Can you imagine being the poor guy at Microsoft that actually has to make that happen? I just don't think it's a big priority right now. Because, by the way, they're trying to ship a major new operating system. Yeah. And that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, I still have mine. And, I brought it with me when I went on vacation. And it's fine for certain things. Like, it's fine if you want to do very basic tasks. If you don't need to run Win32 apps, it's fine. The performance isn't fantastic. But if you're just using it for, looking at email or... opening some basic web pages. I don't know. I'm still.
How's Notepad?
Okay,
Notepad's good. It's a note.
Notepad
would you say
works
it's a,
really well.
A Notepad workstation.
Yep, works well. So I don't know. I think I mentioned this on the show before. My niece, who is at University of Rhode Island, bought one of these because she saw I had one. A couple of years ago, she used it all through college, and found it was fine for what she needed it for. So I guess, I know a lot of people who still have their Surface RTs and they're like, it's still working. I'm not going to dump it and I'm not going to upgrade because it works okay for what I need. I did my Surface 3 review this week, my mini non-reviewers review. And I said, if somebody gave me about $700 and said, which is how much Surface 3 costs.
It said, spend this however you wish.
Yep. And that's how much it costs, right? If you add the pen, which is $50, yep. You add the keyboard, another $140 or whatever.
You don't need to buy a loop, though. That's nice.
Honestly, yeah. I would take this a step further. Depending on your needs, I really think that a 2 gig tablet you're going to use as a computer is sort of a non-starter. I having said that, I don't have one. I haven't tested it, but yep. I really think you need to go for the upper level one. And at that point, you're actually talking about even more money than what you're saying.
You mean Surface Pro, right? When you're saying
or Surface 3 with the 4 gigs of RAM, oh, yeah, and with 4 gigs. 20 gigs of storage, which is 600, so 730, 780, so it's $800.
Yep. This one that we had as a loaner, it worked fine. It actually opened web pages quickly enough to not be annoying, right? It plays video fine. It opens apps respectably. But for me, I still, if you gave me $700 and said, you want to buy a clamshell laptop or you want to buy this laptop? Laptop's a little heavier, but you get your keyboard included. It's already, you know, you don't have to worry about, you know, can I put it on my lap? You can.
But by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this literally just happened today. When I was going through security at the airport in Chicago, the guy is yelling out what you have to take out of the bag.
Everybody said, must take your Surface Pro 3.
Yeah, if you have a laptop, you got to take it out. But he said, if you have a tablet, like an iPad, you don't have to take it out because an iPad is not a laptop.
Whoa.
And I said, that's for sure. And the woman in front of me, who was a normal human being, not like a tech person, from what I could see, turned around and looked at me and laughed and was like, exactly.
I was like,
wow. Why would this be a moment of bonding with someone in line? But yes, I mean, I think the Surface 3 is kind of falls into that category. Like it's a great tablet within the confines of the fact that Windows isn't great on tablets per se. It's sort of a good laptop. It's a better laptop than like an iPad would be. Mm-hmm. But if you're going to spend $700, like, and you really need a laptop, you know, why don't you get a laptop?
Well,
that's a legitimate.
That's just a word, though. I mean,
no, it's not. I mean, a laptop being a physical thing that's connected, that is a machine. What she's talking about with lapability, any size laptop she could put on her lap, and I could, and you could type, and it's not going to fall over. The Surface 3 or Surface Pro 3 are wonderful devices, but many people can't use it that way. It just will topple right over. It doesn't work as a lap, literally as a laptop.
Right, and you know, not everybody needs to type in their lap, but I feel like because they're gearing this toward college students very heavily and high school students, I'm thinking they might type in their laps more like we do than maybe mobile professionals.
Or in situations where you're in a big, you know, like a, what do you call those, bean chairs or on a couch watching TV or whatever it is. I do this a lot where you can kind of balance a laptop on a pillow or something in awkward situations because it's one L-shaped thing. You know, and the weight of your hands keeps the back of it from going over because it's one thing. Whereas this thing would just kind of disconnect. Yeah. And I think Microsoft is trying to sell its vision for the future of computing, which is cool. And it's a wonderful little.
I think they should say something about bean chairs in there.
It's a checkbox item.
Bean chair compatible.
Bean chair.
Yeah.
So I like the Surface 3 fine, but I still feel like if Microsoft ever does make a clamshell laptop that's of the quality of a Surface, I would buy that.
Yeah. Right.
I like the quality.
Of the screen or of the.
No, the build itself, right? The device. I love the kickstand.
But you'd
really
prefer a laptop. You'd like a keyboard attached.
I do.
It would be a better keyboard. I mean, let's face it. The type keyboard can't have. I mean, I've never tried it, but it can't have much travel.
It's a little cramped.
It's not a bad keyboard, but when you kind of, I forget what they call it, when you push it up against the screen so that it's at a slight angle with the magnets, it bounces when you type. It's a little bouncy.
It's also a little, you know, it's you're kind of in here. Small.
Yeah.
If you don't type a lot like we do, it's probably great. It's like answer a couple emails, type in a couple URLs. Right, but when you're sitting there typing, you start feeling like bounce.
For a writer, it probably isn't the perfect.
Right.
I experimented with using a Bluetooth keyboard with my Surface Pro 3 for this reason. You know.
Yeah.
It still has some weird compromises. You know, but plus it's now it's this thing where it has two parts. You know, it's like a It's not the same.
Not the same.
Yeah.
I want it to be the same. Is this the same? No, I don't want it.
Yeah.
Anything else to say? I mean,
no, it's available in a lot of.
By the way, Surface 3 is great for what
it's a nice machine. It is a nice machine.
It's a nice machine.
I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying.
I do think.
If the keyboard and the pen were included, or the keyboard at least was included, I'd be more interested in recommending it than I am now.
You're saying the price is too high for what you get.
The price is high.
I'm normally the one who complains about the price. I mean, I sort of evaluated this against other machines where do these capabilities come into play? And if you would really want a pen that works as fluidly as this one does, there aren't too many other options. You know, it's pretty good for that kind of thing. I mean, my own needs personally, I would go for the laptop or Ultrabook or whatever. But I do wonder. I mean, I sort of feel like this would be a great solution for people who prize mobility above all else. And for students, especially. I think this is going to be, I'm not saying it's going to be replacing iPads in colleges across America or anything, but I think it's going to, I think this will be pretty successful in education. So, Leo, on Monday, was it Monday?
Yeah.
Monday.
Tuesday,
Monday. I had the weird experience of sitting here in my home office where I am now.
Yeah.
Watching the Ignite keynote.
Yeah.
And then getting up and going to the airport and then going to that place. Like,
that is weird. That is traveling in time. Weird.
I sort of didn't feel like I was in Chicago. Well, except for those 2 hours I spent sitting in traffic. It was a weird little quick trip.
Yeah, you're back though, and that's not. Hey, did you see my new watch? This is not an Apple Watch. This is this is the LG.
Wow.
Yeah, the LG Urbane.
So that's a big watch, right? But some of the Android watches I've seen that are kind of more elegant or smaller. That have a round face.
I love the round faces.
I think that's really cool.
This is a gorgeous
watch. I'm actually
really
surprised Apple didn't go round.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah. To dim the screen, press it with your... So these are just like... This is like a swipe left to install system update downloaded. Oh, nice.
It's Android. Hmm. Yep. System update time.
Yep. Well, I just got it out of the box. Downloaded. Okay. All right. Sorry about that. Let us continue. I should probably.
Right, so, what is Ignite? Are we going to do that?
Welcome back.
We did that already. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
We did that part.
Yes, more than enough.
What is Ignite?
So, let's do the Salesforce thing. Do you feel like this is credible? Or now, Microsoft says, yeah, we're interested, but we haven't talked to them. We're just researching, we're doing our due diligence.
Okay, let's talk about this story. This is a Bloomberg story, Bloomberg Business Week story. The headline on the story is Microsoft is said to evaluate a possible bid for Salesforce. You start reading the story.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm sorry to interrupt. How many qualifiers are in that headline?
Is said to. You don't see that a lot in headlines.
Two qualifiers in that headline.
Possible.
That's amazing.
Is possible. Is
this
said
isn't
to.
Vina, is it?
This is even better. Okay. In the middle of the story, Microsoft is not in talks with Salesforce, and no deal is imminent.
What?
Okay.
It's a non-story story.
That's awesome.
I mean, the thing this story is trying to say is if somebody else bids on Salesforce, which is known to be for sale.
It is in play, right? I mean, it's not in play.
Yeah. And Microsoft decides the company that's about to buy them is not a friend. Maybe Microsoft would look into buying them. I mean, you know, every time something is for sale, Microsoft does due diligence
They've
and
got
looks
enough
at it.
Staff, they could probably say, hey, could you just check into this?
Exactly. So I would say, based on what that Bloomberg story says, Microsoft's not right now even bidding or in the bidding and there's nothing imminent. So this story just went crazy. Everybody's like, oh, Microsoft's about to buy Salesforce.
Right.
That's not what that story says.
Okay.
It says
you wouldn't even need a source to write that story, frankly.
You wouldn't. You could say Microsoft, of course, is looking into this because Salesforce is in play.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you think, though, there is a little fire for the smoke?
So there's a couple things to think about here, right? So would it make sense for Microsoft to buy Salesforce? It would be a very expensive buy for them.
They do CRM already.
They have CRM already.
Do they have a CRM that is as full-featured and popular as Salesforce?
Not as popular.
Okay. Salesforce is dominant.
Right. And Microsoft lately in the past year, since Nadella's been there, has been doing a lot of deals with Salesforce. They're doing all kinds of connectors for the Salesforce cloud to Excel and Office 365 with Salesforce. So there's a lot of synergies between them, and they're working together much closer than they used to when Steve Ballmer was the CEO.
Yeah.
So there's stuff there. But I don't know. I guess I'm wondering what value would Microsoft get from buying them? They don't run on Azure, yeah. So you'd have to, I guess, somehow undo all the stuff in their data centers and bring them over to Azure, I would think, or somehow combine the data centers of Salesforce with Microsoft's data centers. I have no idea how hard that would be, but I would think it's not trivial. So you'd get the customer base. You'd have a company with very, very different culture from Microsoft, who you're trying to combine in with Microsoft. I don't know. I think it's a big set of things to overcome. But if Google's bidding on them or Oracle's bidding on them, maybe Microsoft would be like, you know what? It's going to hurt us more if either of those companies get it. So let's get it.
There might be a pure defensive play.
I don't know. It's so hard to think of Mark Benioff at Microsoft.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe he'll just retire then.
He wouldn't stick around.
He could work with Mark Penn.
He could. Your buddy.
Two people that have nothing to, like, should never be at Microsoft. It's perfect.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it'll come to pass. It would be such a weird buy, in my view, in many ways. But if Google was about to buy them or Oracle, maybe Microsoft would just say, let's do it. I don't know.
Were you with me? I think I could have sworn someone at Ignite said that Salesforce has a show that is something like four times the size of Ignite. It's some enormous...
Dreamforce.
Dreamforce is huge. In fact, it's in San Francisco.
Yeah.
We have friends who work there. Alex Lindsay and the Pixel Corps do a lot of the back-end video. That's huge.
It is. It's even bigger than Ignite, I'm pretty sure.
Oh,
it's
much bigger. Oh, no. Yeah.
I heard it was something like 100,000 people.
Yes. It's, yeah. I mean, it's massive.
They take over all of San Francisco downtown, right?
Right. Yeah. It's like how Macworld used to be.
Yeah. So I don't know. You know, people are asking, do you think it's going to happen? I don't know. You know, Benioff was at Build. He was in row one at Build, sitting there watching the keynotes.
Interesting.
Let's see.
That bug just came by again.
Oh, no, not another bug.
Same one.
Is it summer there now?
Yeah, spring is. It's going to be, it's like 80 degrees out here.
Is it really? Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and we should talk about that other crazy story, the Skype versus Sky thing.
Oh, yeah, Sky. Well, so.
Seriously, Sky, come on. Enough.
Sky already sued over Skype.
Right.
It's Skype.
That's why SkyDrive is now OneDrive.
Right.
Sky is a British television network. I think Rupert Murdoch owns it. B is satellite. They have Sky TV.
Yes.
That doesn't seem confusing at all.
No, it doesn't.
But the EC thinks it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what BBC said is Microsoft's probably not going to have to change the name if this decision stands, but they could have to pay Sky rights on the name, which is just insane. I don't know. I think this is just crazy.
I think it's insane. I'm on the good news front. The Sky TV did not try to prevent Skype from using the name Skype,
right?
Which is something they did with SkyDrive. Mm-hmm. But when they went for the trademark, they said no, and they used as a reason the fact that Skype was talking about getting into these businesses that were similar to what Sky
could
TV.
Could Microsoft reasonably go to Link?
Well,
they just went away from Link.
They literally just rebranded everything.
Well, that's the timing, right?
Yeah.
You know, Skype has hundreds of millions of active users. Right. I mean, this is one of their few really great consumer brands. I am going to murder this insect. I swear to God, it's like...
Come on, we'll watch. Go get it.
I can't catch
it. Get your fly swatter out.
Go get him, Paul. So you know you want him.
He knows I'm weak. He's playing with me.
All right. There's nothing more to say about either Salesforce... or Sky. So you know what that tells me?
Mm-mm.
Time to take a break. and come back with the back of the book. Paul will gladly welcome this moment of respite.
So we can kill that bug.
Kill that bug, Paul. Kill that bug. Our show today brought to you by the good folks at lynda.com. Talk about acquisitions. LinkedIn just bought them for more than $1 billion. And it's really, I'm so thrilled for Lynda Wyman and her team because they've created this great product, which, by the way, is only going to get better with the infusion of some cash. They already have over 3,000 video courses in pretty much any topic you'd ever be interested in. If you're a learner, I mean, I think this human being is a learning machine. If you are curious, or you like to, you know, you want to be better at work, you want to get a new job, or you just want to make your hobbies, you know, more fun. Oh man, I just love Lynda. LYNDA.com. Some great new courses in there. Of course, for Office, there's nobody better. I mean, they have IT stuff in every possible area. For instance, installing and configuring a test environment for SharePoint 2013. How about that? Up and running with Cisco CLI switch configuration, Excel tips, installing, administering, and configuring Active Directory, data visualization, using SQL Server Spatial with AutoCAD Map 3D. Yes, they get that granular, but they also do high-level stuff like in photography, you know, things like beginning photography, thinking about composition, all the way through the latest on Photoshop. And they, by the way, yes, they've already got Lightroom 6 courses. Getting started with video production and editing. Developing executive presence. These are the soft business skills that they also teach. Some amazing business skill courses. Resume building. I want to take developing an executive presence. I do not have that. Strategic.
I disagree, Leo.
I disagree, too.
That's why I'm wearing the suit. I'm developing my executive presence.
That's why I'm sitting here in my underwear and you look like a million bucks.
Luckily, you are not.
I took the class at lynda.com. Strategic planning fundamentals. Code clinic. If you're interested in R, in JavaScript, in C, they've got new classes in that area. I love lynda.com. Watch and learn from the best in the business. Many of them are friends. People have appeared here. People like Burt Monroy, Ben Long, Derek's Story. They have thousands of video courses you can watch on demand on your iPad, on your tablet, on your Android, on your computer. You can browse. Each course has its full text, beautifully written text transcript. You can browse it, search for an answer, skip to that point, take notes as you go, refer to them later. I can go on and on. I want you to try. And we've got 10 days free, which is enough to really get the lay of the land. The way lynda.com works, you subscribe to it, the whole thing, for a month. Very affordable. But that way you don't have to choose a course now and say, oh, I'm going to get that course or that course. It's like the whole thing. It's wide open for you. I think it's a good way to do it. Because you know what happens? Your brain says, oh, and I want to do this. But now, okay, that inspired me to do that. And you don't have to choose. 10 days free. See what's there. lynda.com/windows. Please try it today. I love it. We love it. Lynda's the best. lynda.com/windows. Windows Weekly on the air. Paul Thurrott, Mary Jo Foley. Mary Jo still in Chicago. Paul Thurrott came home, and he's about to give us our tip of the week. Paul?
I guess I have two tips. They're reminders. They're things I've talked about in the past. But one is just the Games with Gold promotion.
I check that every month.
Xbox Live Gold. Yeah, I had kind of zoned on it. It's already March 6th. May 6th.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, because it's the beginning of the month, the new games are available. So this one new one for Xbox One and two for Xbox 360. One of the games from last month has been carried over. So be sure to check on that stuff.
You bet.
And I do have an article. We haven't done an Audible pick in a while, but I wanted to just discuss some general tech books that are really good on Audible.
Good.
I just re-listened to Masters of Doom.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah, it's about the early history now, I guess, of id Software. You know, the creation of Wolfenstein and Doom and Quake and the fallout between John Carmack and John Romero and all that stuff. It's read by Wesley Crusher, whose real name is what? Will Wheaton?
Wesley Crusher. I'm sure Will would love hearing that.
Never liked him on Star Trek.
No, he was terrible, but he's a great guy. He's great.
He does a great job on audiobooks. He also did Ready Player One. Yeah. It's fantastic.
Yeah, and he's just a nice guy.
Okay,
I don't know. He's not Wesley Crusher. That's just a character.
Yeah. Yeah. He'll always be Wesley Crusher.
I know. Really. Poor kid.
But whatever, one of the best kind of tech industry type books that's on Audible. Someone had talked to me recently about that book, Showstoppers, and it's a crime against humanity that it's not on Audible.
It's so good.
Love to have that on Audible.
Zachary Pascal, whatever his name is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. P. Zachary Pascal.
Yeah. It's just great.
J. Pascal.
Zachary Pascal. Thank you.
I think.
Thank you.
Open, which is a book written by one of the Compaq co-founders, is fantastic. The Steve Jobs biography, the official one, I happen to like better than the newer one, but because it talks a lot about the products. And so if you just want to – and what I do with that book is I go back and just listen to the chapter about iPhone or the chapter about iPad or the chapter about whatever product. I love it for that reason. And if you're interested in how those things came together, which I think a lot of people would be – it's just a great one. And it's one I've listened to parts of again many, many times. So, you know, there are lots of great, I listen to a lot of Stephen King stuff and everything, but what I'm really hoping to see going forward are some good books about, you know, what's happening now, recent Apple stuff. I guess we do have a little bit of that, recent Google stuff, recent Microsoft stuff. I'd love to see someone write a, you know, rise and fall and possible rise again of Microsoft type thing, but we don't have as many options, you know?
No,
I'm not doing that.
Mary Jo, let me just say this. You will do this.
No, I will not. You will do this. You're the book guy. You do it.
I had a conversation with someone who shall remain nameless at Build, and your name came up. And all I'm saying is,
you have
to do this.
Have you ever written a book, Mary Jo?
Yep, I did. Yeah. I wrote a book called Microsoft 2.0 about 6 years ago. And a lot of people are like, will you do 3.0? No. I hated writing books. I'm like Paul.
It's
I'm not a
worst.
Masochist.
It's the worst.
All right. But I think between the two of us.
It's the worst.
I'll write it.
I'll just put my name on it if you write it.
No, you have to contribute to it. But
no. I'm not doing another book.
Crack.
I hate writing books. Sorry.
It is. It's so much work. And you make so little money.
Yep. It's just not very fun.
It's just frustrating.
It is.
And having written a book, although
then Leo could read the audiobook.
I did actually just get approached by an agent who says we could make a lot of money if you would write, you know, kind of a memoir how to. And he says, I know I could shop this around. Mm-hmm. And Lisa's going, yeah, maybe we should think about this. Mm-hmm. And my reaction, just like Mary Jo, nope. Paul, for some reason, Mary Jo, he's there's something lacking in his makeup.
I know. He loves books. Every time he does, there's a gap in my DNA. He says this to me every time. Don't let me agree to do another book. I try to stop him each time.
And me too.
It never works.
Me too.
Sorry.
Isn't that weird?
This is the one, Mary Jo. This is the one.
Sorry. The answer is no.
Nope.
Okay.
I sound like my mom. The answer is no.
I'll change the subject. Did you notice, Paul, this new thing? I saw it on my Xbox One yesterday. There's a new dashboard. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not in the beta test.
Actually, I supposedly have an email invitation I've never seen, but I
okay.
Yeah. But I was in and then I was out, and I'm supposedly back.
I've been in for all along, and it's great, except that you get a lot more downloads than you already get.
Yeah.
But this new dashboard looks great. It's and Larry Herb, Major Nelson, introduces it with a nice video and. And it looks like it's some nice features. And most importantly, it makes it very easy to see what's new and navigate around and stuff. So I think that was smart.
And Mary Jo, I know you saw this because I just saw you retweeted it. But did you see the ActiveX and VBScript is dead thing? And
we knew that Edge? Though, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, I just never saw it stated so.
Yeah. Plainly. Now it's plain. Yeah. Microsoft's now saying just like with Media Center, they're saying finally, definitively, ActiveX is not supported in the new Edge browser, which was formerly known as Spartan.
I didn't think it was. I distinctly remember thinking that ActiveX was the single greatest thing I'd ever heard of.
I remember, me too. And then
lightweight COM objects that run on the web. Yeah.
But if you think about it, it was a terrible idea.
Not now, though. Not now.
No, it's too risky.
Yep.
Oh, well. All right, so anyway, after Mary Jo and I write our book, what I'm going to move on to is the software pick. I mentioned this last week. In fact, I should mention both games. There are two really cool games available now for Windows Phone that are, were on other platforms first, I believe. Certainly one of them was. But they're both cool because they're so visually different than basically everything else that's out there. One is Monument Valley, which is the one I know was available elsewhere first. The other one is called Hitman Go. I'm not particularly interested in either type of game per se personally, but I recognize how kind of artistic and excellent they look. You know, Hitman Go looks like it is made out of little 3D dioramas, essentially. It's just kind of, it's a turn-based, you know, strategy game. It's kind of amazing looking. And then Monument Valley is a M.C. Escher looking, pastel puzzle game that's sort of Elo Milo-esque, but just gorgeous looking. And it's you know, for all the doom and gloom around Windows Phone and apps kind of disappearing from the marketplace in some cases, this has been a pretty good year for games, especially. We've seen some good stuff this year. So you should drown your sorrows in Monument
Valley. And we're going to see more because of this new policy, right?
Universal apps.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Mary Jo Foley has an enterprise pick of the week.
I do. I stole Paul's pick, I think, one of them. my enterprise pick of the week is Skype for Business, which is the new name for Link. Microsoft talked a lot about this
Skype.
Show. Skype for Business. No, not that. Skype.
Skype.
They talked a lot about this at Ignite this week because they actually managed to release and make commercially available Skype for Business server, the on-premises version of the new server. Well, they had already been in the midst of rolling out Office 365 Skype for Business service and the new client for Skype for Business for Windows. And so now they're actually getting the server piece out there. They did tell us at the show that by this summer, if you're waiting for the Skype for Business client for iOS and Android, it should be out, and the Mac client for Skype for Business before the end of this year. Because I've had a lot of questions about that. A lot of people are using Skype for Business on their Macs and very curious about when they can get the client. Answer, before end of year. They're also going to be rolling out what they call Enterprise Voice, which is the telephony piece of Skype for Business, so that you can use Skype for Business to replace a PBX, basically call regular phone numbers through the service before the end of this year. So if you're in the U.S., you're going to be able to start using that functionality in 2015. And as 2016 kicks off, they'll be rolling it out into other countries. So Skype for Business is definitely on a pretty fast-paced roll right now, and they're going all out to make sure they replace not just the brand, but are bringing some of the new features to the service that have been missing. So, cool. that's the enterprise pick.
Yeah. And yep. Your code name. By the way, Mary Jo did a great tip on how she does her code names. You'll see it on Saturday's The New Screensaver.
Nice. I didn't know if you guys cared about finding code
names. No, we use that, and we have one from Paul, too. I think we're going to use both.
Nice. Nice. So code name pick of the week is something called Karina, C-A-R-I-N-A. And this is one of the many Constellation-themed code names from the Microsoft Dynamics CRM team. Karina is what officially is called Dynamics CRM 2015 Update 1. So Karina's a way better name. Yeah.
Awesome.
It's the new version, the updated version of Microsoft CRM product. It came out this week also at Ignite, although it was so overshadowed by much other news. But it's out there now, available to customers. And the catch is this is an online-only update to Dynamics CRM 2015. So if you want some of the functionality in this version, which has some new mobile apps and a lot of things around embedding OneNote, some new immersive Excel capabilities, they've got a lot of new features here. You have to wait until the end of this year if you want it on-prem. But if you're using CRM online in the cloud, you can get this update now. So that's the code name pick of the week.
All right. And we got to have some beer.
We do.
Got to have some beer.
We do. So one of the things I also did here at Ignite this week is I was on another podcast that Microsoft does called Patch and Switch on Channel 9.
That's a great name.
And It is. Yeah. And we did a beer show Sunday, a live beer show. All we talked about was beer. We didn't talk about tech, just beer. And we had some brewers come in from Chicago. We had Lagunitas because their second new brewery is based in Chicago. That family who runs Lagunitas is from Chicago, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
So, yep, they opened a big brewery here in Chicago. Yeah. And then the other brewer who came was Revolution Brewing. They're based in Chicago as well. And they brought with them a beer that's very common around here in Chicago called Anti-Hero. And it's a really, really nice IPA. I don't know if Paul would like this one. Pretty hoppy, 70 IBUs, so pretty hoppy. It was good. It was good. it wasn't like so over the top hoppy, but if you're in Chicago and you're looking for something where you can taste the hops and you really want a hoppier leaning IPA, I would recommend the Revolution Brewing Anti-Hero. The other related piece I have here is for all you Untappd fans on Windows Phone. Finally, we got the new version of Untappd for Windows Phone. And there's some really good additions to the update. We can now rate beers with quarter stars. You guys might not think that's a big deal, but
it's very, very discerning.
Yeah.
No, if
there's
you're
a huge difference between 3.25
5 and a 4, you want the 3.75. Now you have that. Yes. Okay. I want that a lot. I even sometimes write that in my own comments. I have nothing else to do. And you also can do some editing. So, you know, when you when you post comments about your beer and the word hoppy becomes hippie, as it often does.
That drives me crazy.
See, I knew it. Well, you can go
that
back
one hits
and
me
edit
all the time.
Comments. Yep. You can edit your comments.
Too hoppy.
You
too
hoppy hippie? Yeah. He's a hoppy hippie.
Yeah, so you should go get the updated version for Windows Phone now. And it's finally up to the level feature-wise of what they've had for iOS and Android. So now we're all on a level playing field on Untappd, which is great.
And I think there is – did you mention the beer? I don't think you did. Or did you? Yes,
yep,
you did.
I did.
I just didn't
Anti-Hero.
Show the Anti-Hero. Of course, of course you did.
Yes.
I think that's it.
Too hoppy. Yay.
It's too hoppy. How do you say hoppy in Boston? Happy.
It's hoppy.
Happy makes me happy.
We say it's crappy.
Crappy happy.
Aww.
Happy means crappy. Paul Thurrott is at the Super... No. He's at Thurrott.com. Mm-hmm. Don't be confused. Look for the rainbow-colored tea in every box.
It's good drinking.
Mm.
Mm. You have the signature edition, so it's less crapware.
Yeah, look at that. Paul Thurrott signature.
What about the beer stein, though?
I want the stein. Yeah. Is there going to be
one?
The
beer stein is awesome. Yeah, I think we're going to solve it. Nice. Well, we can't solve that exact one because it's kind of commemorative, but.
This is the best.
Did you see the picture? I put pictures of the stein up on Facebook.
Yeah, oh, you did?
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah,
all right. Thurrott.com.
It is beautiful.
It is beautiful, Thurrott.com. It's the place, my friends, to go if you want to keep up on using Windows, what's going on with Microsoft and all of that. And, of course, Mary Jo Foley's All About Microsoft.com is where all the hot news gets broken. All About Microsoft.com, Thurrott.com, and Windows Weekly. It's all you need. Visit Windows Weekly at the Twit website, twit.tv/ww. You can watch us live every Wednesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, 1800 UTC at live.twit.tv. On-demand shows are always available after the fact on twit.tv/ww or wherever you get your podcasts, iTunes or Xbox Music or the great apps. Dimitri Lialin was here. We mentioned this last week on the show. He came to our live event. It was so good to meet him. He wrote the one of the amazing Windows Phone
apps. I can't believe you hadn't met him before.
I know. That was weird. Yeah.
Anyway, I was glad to meet him now because he did a great job. And he's announced he's going to do his
thing. I'm just surprised.
Well, he works at Microsoft. I wasn't sure. So he's on the tools team. He works on Visual Studio, which is...
Right.
So he said, and this blew me away, he's going to do a XAML version. He's going to use our API. We're giving him the keys to the apiary login and all that. So he's going to use our API, which should make it an amazing app. I didn't know this, but when he wrote the Windows Phone version... He created a SQL Server database and created his own API. So it is API driven from his own
SQL Azure or something, isn't it? Like he kind of scraped
SQL Azure. Yeah, he scraped our RSS feed, maybe the web. Anyway, this will be easier for him now. We've got a nice RESTful interface that he can query, and he's going to make it open source. So it'll be a great example application. I think, you know, we're going to get Craig Mullaney to do an iOS version. Maybe we'll get that to be open source as well. So people can see implementations so that they can use it themselves. Sure. And then it will. So that means it'll work when Windows 10 comes out on Windows 10, Windows Phone 10. And when they finally apply it to Xbox on Xbox One, which I've been dying to have an Xbox interface so you could watch on the big screen at home.
That's really cool.
I can't wait till I can say Xbox. Play Windows Weekly.
You know, Leo, I don't want to get you too excited, but I'm going to throw this out there.
Yeah.
There's a guide in Xbox.
Yeah.
Potentially, your shows could show up in the guide as they are live, alongside TV shows and stuff.
Dimitri.
So just a possibility.
Oh, that would be, we would then, you know, that's all I ever
wanted. I don't want to jump the gun or whatever.
All I ever wanted was parody with quote, real TV.
That's all I've ever wanted to.
Just we want to be in the guide. You know, the Johnny Carson Show, Gomer Pyle USMC, Windows
Magnum
Weekly.
PI.
Magnum PI, Windows Weekly. We just want to be in there.
Yep.
Be awesome.
Oh. Then I can retire. Then I will take off the suit and stop.
Hang it up, put your sweater on,
put my
change
sweater
your shoes.
Back on. It's
play
a beautiful
with a little
day
train that goes
in the Windows hood. A beautiful day. So, Polly. Mary Jo, it's been great working with you. Have a wonderful day, and we'll see you next time.
You've been a great neighbor,
You've
Leo.
You've been a great neighbor. I'm Windows Weekly. Bye, neighbor.